And I take it that you've really just been talking about sovereignty without using the word. Have I understood you?
Yes.
Well, you put it all quite well without threatening to start a new country and apply for admission to the United Nations or something like that.
I don't think we want that. We just want what was rightfully ours thousands of years ago.
Thanks very much,
Thank you.
Mr. Roberts.
May I say something just to say what I think about the land, selling the land in 91. I feel that it's a wrong thing to have had it done that way, and that any of the people that have we all will have the right to sell it stands now. And any of the people who are short of money and need money badly, which is often the way it is, after a poor season and so on, it's just very easy to see that people are going to get rid of the land and they will be left with nothing. And that most people will do that. And these seasons have been so poor and scattered here now and then quite often, it seems to me it's just quite certain that the land will not stay with the people. They will be selling it.
Yes. Could we have your name, ma'am? Just
Eunice Nesseth.
Thank you very much. Yes, sometimes people believe in a general principle and yet are willing to concede that when they're in a tough spot, they might do something because they just don't have any choice. They have to do it, and that's a very important consideration.
It would be very good to change that, for sure.
If I can say something, add to what Mrs. Nith has just said, I think a very good parallel is what has happened with the limited entry program in Alaska. The studies show that the permits that were granted to Alaska Native people there are being transferred away into people from outside the state and in greater numbers, so that it's going to be the larger number of the people that own the rights to fish in the state are going to be from the cities or even outside the state. And this is a good illustration of what Mrs. Nith has just said. People fall into hard times and they see a source of ready cash and those things can be picked up for a lot less than they're actually worth. And I think that this is one of the problems that provisions for the sale of stock isn't changed, the same thing's going to happen here, so that eventually the people that do retain their stock are not going to necessarily have control of the corporations that they belong to, but it'll be somebody else that has stepped in and gotten the majority control.
Thank you, Mr. Madsen. That point has been raised in quite a few other coastal villages about limited entry, and as Mr. Madsen suggests, if people are willing to surrender a limited entry permit, then it might be an awful lot easier to surrender some shares for whatever is needed at the time. Yes, sir.
Yeah, my name's Ed Brown. I just have a little comment to say. I just think of the corporations that made 1991 one of the biggest priorities and shown that they could get along with the villages without having conflicts all the time. I believe that would have helped very much, like 50% at least. But we've always had a hard time getting any answers from the corporation, so we've always just went along with what they decided to do, whether it was right or wrong. But really the lack of communication or the secrecy, whatever it is, which I can't prove, but I know most of the people in this corporation don't know what's happening until we read it in the paper, until once a year we find out they're unloading our assets, and by that time it's too late to really get up and complain because they're gone. That's all I have to say for right now.
Well, that's the whole idea of corporations, that the shareholders give the board of directors the right to do business, and they go ahead and do it. that's the...
Yeah. A little more communication to us and tell us what's going on until we read about it a year late when something has gone down.
Can I say something again about the meetings, the regular meetings, board meetings? We feel that we're not welcome there at all. And
is this... which corporation is this, just for the...
Koniag.
Koniag.
Yes. And it's we're made to feel that if any of the members go to... I haven't done it once, and certainly got told off to. I mean, it was made into an executive session. Well, and everybody got such a, you know, antsy about it, we just went and never came again. So I think these meetings are for the membership. Why can't we be at the meetings? We can sometimes maybe help along with ideas that are pertinent at the time, and which we'll miss altogether till the next year, if we ever get them in then even.
Thank you, ma'am.
Is it something that's not done and not to be done, that the membership come at all, or what? I would like to really know.
Well, under state corporation law, you have shareholders' annual meetings, and the shareholders are entitled to go and to express their opinions about the performance of the corporation during the preceding year. That's...
We can hardly know what's been decided because we're not there and we're not told. And there's just... I don't know how we would have any ideas about it by sitting home always and just kind of feeling left out forever.
Part of the Alaska Native Things Civil Act.
The question is whether the D2 legislation is part of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Well, some parts of it are. In the D2 legislation, in ILCA, there were several amendments made to ANCSA. For instance, provision for the land bank was included in ANILCA in 1980, and so on. So that some features of D2 are really part of ANCSA. We have this portable microphone that we can carry around if you want to speak from your seat, but some of you would like to speak from here, I think that's preferable. I think this is I'm not quite sure how the sound system is set up, but yeah, so this goes out over the radio, I gather, and the other doesn't. But, so you have your choice.
I'm sure I'm not the only one who feels this way about the meetings, and but I would really like to know. I'd like a real discussion about these meetings. Are we able to go to the regular everyday meetings so that we know what's being said there? We don't have to take part if we don't want to, but is there something unlawful for us to be there? Usually?
No, you're entitled to be at a shareholders meeting. That's.
I mean the regular board meetings.
About
the regular.
Board of directors meeting.
Yeah, the
regular monthly meeting.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm meaning that.
Well, normally, normally the board is entitled to say whether or not anyone who's not a board member will be allowed to attend. That's with regard to board meetings. So.
Well, I'm glad to hear this because I just feel that it must be that people can be there, but now if I hear it said that it's the usual thing, they're not done if you're allowed, if the board allows you, but when you're made to feel that you're just simply not welcome, well, you keep away, and that just doesn't feel right. Is there some way that can be something in the paper about it once in a while that it's for the board, for anybody to come?
Well, it's up to the board members.
That's what I mean,
to decide
board.
Whether or not they will admit shareholders to be present throughout their board meetings. That's normally left up to them. You can always change the articles of your corporation to provide that shareholders have a right to be at board meetings, but that means you have to amend what is in effect the constitution of the corporation, something not always easy to do. Part of the problem, I suppose, is that these native corporations are quite different from something like General Motors. If you have a share in General Motors and you walk in on the board of directors meeting in Detroit, I guess they would say, well, we don't want you in here. You're just a shareholder. Native corporations, the people think of the corporation in a much more intimate sense as theirs. When you apply these normal regulations of corporate law to native corporations, the shareholders often feel that it isn't the way they want it. There it is. You've got the state corporation law, and that governs ANCSA corporations, native corporations.
So then there's this chance that if we want to agree on it with the boards or whatever, that we can change that so that they are at times.
Well, you can change. Yes, you can amend the articles of the corporation so that shareholders have a right to attend board meetings. Now, that is something that you can do under the law, but that requires a lot of work and getting the appropriate majority for the
Somebody who's going to, like, if I wanted to do it, I would have to just go from house to house and person to person to talk to see if how many people do really feel that way, and do we want to change it.
I'm afraid so.
Yes. Well, thank you very much.
May I say something to that?
Yes, ma'am. Do you want to come up here? Might as well.
My name is Mary Gallagher, and I'm a member of CONIAC here, Native Association. And when our corporation here first started, the meetings were not as restricted as they are now. All the CONIAC meetings were practically open. You know, we'd go to a meeting, and if there was anything confidential or there was something that they needed to discuss, well, we would leave the building for a little while, but we were always welcome to those meetings. So I don't know why they're so restricted anymore. And I think Mrs. Eunice is right, and they should be more open to the members. Mm-hmm. And another thing I wanted to talk about is Native allotments, which we are having a struggle with. I've applied for our Native allotment when they first started applying. And my husband and I have a lease to this land that we have, grazing lease. And we seem to be pushed from, I don't know what you would call it, but so far we can't get together with BLM or they pushed it over. You know, it's always handed over to from BLM to the state, and from the state to the, I don't know what it is. And I also have water rights, which they tell me that BLM in Anchorage, Bureau of Land Management, made a mistake by giving me this water rights. And I don't know where the mistake was, because I have a certificate that is recorded here at City Hall. So they still say that, you know, it isn't appropriate. And we also have cattle in this area that we're using for water rights. And
But you so applied for an allotment for the land that you use for grazing.
Yes, we have. We've used the land since 1943. I know that about a couple of years ago, or a year ago or so, we were told by CONIAC that we're about ready to get our allotment for that island. And it seems to me that it's been going on, and so far we haven't gotten it. And I think that there are several people that have gotten their allotments that don't have anything on those lands. And there are more people applying for land that don't have anything on their land. But we have used this land that we applied for. Grazing lease and for Native allotment. We have several cattle on this land, and we don't know how we stand as far as I'm concerned, and we are still desperately waiting to see what's going to happen, and we wish that we could, you know, have that settled. We don't know what we'll do with our cattle. We have cattle over here in Near Island where I have my water rights, and that we applied for also, but I don't know what we're going to do. It seems like they push us from one thing to another and always passing the buck.
When did you apply for your allotment? Back in the 60s?
When it was 60s, yeah. Mm-hmm. Back in the 60s. So it's really discouraging. I wish that, you know, some of us that are using the land were able to get it, you know. We've used our beef, and when we had a restaurant, well, the beef that we graze on this land was used for public, you know, and during the war when there was no beef or beef was restricted, you know, we were able to use our own cattle. So that's something that should be looked into. Also, you mentioned about the fish and game. I think they should take care of our streams so that the fish isn't all fished out. Whereas right now we have more and more sport fishermen coming up here, taking over the streams, and they even fly up to the lakes, and you know, they carry a lot of fish out of here, and sooner or later we're not going to have any left for our people, and they depend on all this for their living. Okay.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ms. Gallagher.
My name's Marvin Frost. I'm a shareholder in the Regional and Village Corporation. Since 1978, I've managed a village corporation. And I'd like to just share maybe my experience in the Native movement and begin.
Which corporation do you manage?
Fog Neck Native Corporation.
Mm, thank you.
But back in 74, I was going to college, and I wrote a paper for a class I was taking called Native Rights. And it was entitled Land Claim Settlement Act Designed for Failure. And I wish I had that paper to be able to share tonight, just what I was envisioning back in 74. But I look at the Claims Act as a vehicle that more or less opened up Alaska to the oil industry. It seemed that the claims that the natives had to the land had somehow put a halt to that proposed pipeline. And so they very quickly put together this settlement with the natives. And it appears to me to be a very temporary, I envision this act as so temporary in time. I don't see how the native people will survive under this act myself. If you look at the Koniag region, you can see that it's failed here. To me, I feel that it's been a failure. It hasn't brought our people together. And when I got involved in the Native movement in 78, I can honestly say at that time I enjoyed it. But each year that went by, it got more technical. I know as manager, I would write the proxy statements and the proxy material and mail them out myself. But within 3 years, you couldn't do a thing without a lawyer. You couldn't make a move without getting their opinion on what you wanted to do. So many people are frustrated because of the communication problems that we've all had with our shareholders. That seems to be a major problem in every aspect of our life, and it's no different at the corporate level. We've had this at a Fog Neck, that we don't let our shareholders know what we're doing. But I feel, too, that, and I know one of our directors and shareholders would always share that we were put in an element that, you know, we just couldn't adapt in the corporate world. How can you expect a native that, or an individual that knows nothing about business, about corporations, to have to follow every letter of the law and to become this entity and survive in the business world? But I've seen so many dear people ruined by trying to make it as a Native leader, as a board of director, and they did their best. Before I got involved in the Native movement, I was very critical of the people that were at Koniag and these various villages until I got on the inside and had to experience firsthand the pressures and the criticism from the shareholders and from the community. And it was immense. It was the biggest challenge of my life, in fact. But the bottom line was that we had to survive. We had to become a business, and we had to make it. The bottom line was, or you'd go under if you couldn't make a profit. And you can look at the villages and the region here, and they went out and invested in businesses, made investments in businesses that they knew nothing about. But they thought they were doing the best, and they made these investments. We made investments in local businesses, and we lost big dollars. And we were using lawyers, we were using accountants. We used our own judgment. But again, so many, you were in over your head. And the situation that some of you are talking about tonight, you know, that you want to know what's going on in these corporations, and you know, it's like they're trying to hide everything from you. When you accept the responsibility of a director or as a manager, these meetings that you have, again, you look at all these board of directors, these seats are all filled. They have to be filled by Native people that have never, again, ran a corporation. Most of us never ran a business, but we have to make those types of decisions. And so, again, to repeat myself, you're under a lot of pressure, and you get together at a meeting, and it isn't coming together to have a party. You're taxed. You might get opinions from outsiders, consultants, investing people, but ultimately it's your decision that is going to lead into where you invest and what you end up doing. And if you could understand that, I don't know if this is a very good answer for you, but this is my own perspective, that it isn't a place to have all your shareholders present. Not that you don't want them there, but you've got to concentrate on the business at hand. I think our share of that $962 million that we started out with at a Fogneck was like $3 million. And we had to go out and invest that and invest it wisely. But we followed what some of the other corporations were doing. In our regional corporation, we made local investments. And again, we lost. But we learned. But it was expensive. And you look at most of these villages and regions throughout the state, they've lost literally millions of dollars. We've stumbled along, and not many have survived. I'm happy to share that our corporation has survived. But it's been very costly to our shareholders and to our corporation that we did survive. I am one that lost all faith in our judicial system. Litigation has hurt this region. Perhaps it'll bankrupt this region and many of the villages. We survived that. But along the way, I never did feel we were ever served justice. Millions of dollars was spent. The thing never ended, hasn't ended to this day. And it's really been a struggle, and it hasn't been easy. But being on the inside, working with the village, I've had an opportunity to work with our regional people. I've never sensed from any of these people trying to hide anything from the shareholders. being deceitful, trying to just build up themselves personally. But again, they were under a lot of stress, a lot of pressure to make good investments, to try and get something back to the shareholder. But as you can see, in the situation we're in today, to date, everything's pretty well failed for many different reasons, as our shareholders well know. But I hope I've shed a little bit of light in regards to why you can't have your shareholders at every director's meeting. You're in competition with all the other businesses throughout this city and this state. And a lot of the things that you are doing, it would hurt you tremendously if the competition knew what was going on. And so in that vein, you can't have everybody knowing what you're doing. And I guess in that respect is when they think you're trying to hide something, because you go into an executive session on certain matters. But I just hope you can get a little bit of insight into why shareholders are generally not present at directors' meetings and at these business meetings that, that these corporations do have. We'd love to have you there, but it's not the place. And I guess an annual meeting isn't enough, a meeting once a year. But my big complaint is that it's been too technical for our people. Again, as Roy was sharing about proxies and annual meetings and elections, when I first started, I was able to write the material myself. But in 1984, I can't even send a newsletter out without running it by an attorney that it might be taken in the wrong way and have someone come at us in some form of litigation. I know when I was writing this material, we were told that they were going to have a different set of rules that would pertain only to the regional and village corporations in regards to the proxy material and the regulations we'd have to follow. But in 1980 or 81, they threw that out and they just put us with the regulations that all corporations have to follow. And it hurt, and it hurt us. I think one of my biggest concerns for the native people throughout this state is the land issue. In my job as manager, I've been at AFN conventions, I've been at AFN meetings and Alaska Native Foundation meetings in regards to the land and what do we do with it. The money's running out. To many corporations, the money's already run out. And they have literally hundreds of thousands of acres of land that so many of these villages, that's how they survive, is living off this land, the subsistence lifestyle that is jeopardized today. And I know one thing that comforts me today is that the beauty and uniqueness of a Fognak Island, the natives more or less control that. We can keep it from being taken over by, I don't want to use this in a derogatory way, but complete development. We can keep it the wilderness that it is. It can be used for the subsistence lifestyle of the native people. But years to come, the timber on a Fognak Island, we know there isn't enough there to sustain our corporation come 1997, 1998, when we have to pay anywhere from $250,000 to $1 million. You can only guess today at what our tax liability will be. But we will not have an income from our logging operation that would be able to pay these taxes to keep us the owner of this land. And there's timber on this a small percentage of the land that we own. And to me, it's kind of defeating itself. I mean, we were given something, but I can't help but think that the 40 million acres that the natives have received in this state by the year 2000, I don't see how they'll have title to being optimistic 10% of the land. Land banks, it's just a deferred tax. I have never yet been shown anything that's going to work, that we can keep ourselves from this tremendous tax liability. This sovereignty issue in the United Tribes of Alaska, you know, there's a movement here that might be a vehicle. I'm not too familiar with it at this point, but that's my major concern today with the Act. And there are many, many concerns, but mine is the land issue. I think it'll threaten the culture and the lifestyle of all the natives, because of the Claims Act, this land that we do have, that we do presently control, is threatened. How do you possibly pay that liability and survive as a corporation? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Frost. Thank you.
My name is Julie Kanagan, and I'm a board of director of Apognife Natives, as well as Canna. And I guess I've often heard the question from many people throughout the shareholders throughout our region here, you know, who does the land claims benefit, the native people or the attorneys? And a lot of them say, well, attorneys are getting rich out of it, at least, you know, nobody else is. And I think I want to elaborate more on, I think, what Marvin Frost was saying on the litigation. I think litigation has been pretty costly to our region. And it's had its effect emotionally as well as financially on everyone here, or the shareholders. And I think what I would just like to say is that in order to prevent such costly litigation from the, you know, from the village corporations, is maybe to try to, if there are any conflicts between shareholders in the region, if there is any other way to work out those conflicts, whether it be a hearing through, maybe just having a, you know, judge or maybe some solution finders to sit and work with the opposing sides, the conflicting sides, and maybe hear them out so that it doesn't have to go through the very costly litigation that has happened to our region here in Kodiak.
Mediation.
Whatever. Yeah. It's just some way so that, you know, we don't have to go through that again. I don't think any corporation could afford, I know our region couldn't afford another one. I don't think it can afford anything right now, let alone a litigation. But that's all. I just kind of wanted to voice my concern and my opinion on that. I would like to, however, respond to, I think, shareholders wanting to sit in on the meetings, board meetings. And I think, you know, I can understand they're wanting to be able to sit in on the meetings. And I think when I was, before I was a board member, I felt the same way. However, I think I've changed my views since becoming a board member, because they have a right to know what's going on, and I can certainly understand that. But if we were to invite shareholders to sit in, have an open door thing to our meetings, there's a lot of times, you know, there's we have a lengthy agenda and a lot of business to go through. And if we were to respond to every shareholder's questions or whatever, we would be meeting, you know, for 2-3 days, which would be pretty costly in itself. I think if anybody, I would suggest that if any shareholders would like to, I think, address the board, I think they certainly are welcome to be able to, you know, come and let the board know that they wish to be heard on certain issues or ask any questions. That's all I had.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Yes?
Yes, my name is Dolores Padilla, and I was involved with Native Affairs for about 18 years on both the regional profit and nonprofit, also serving as a secretary and vice chairman of the Karluk Native Corporation, and I'm currently co-chairman of the Karluk IRA Land Committee. Starting off with the nonprofit and also Koniag, probably the same time that Roy Madsen did. I have observed some real changes since that time. I've seen a real split, I would say, amongst Native people, and one of the largest splits being the urban and rural situations. I've seen a decrease primarily in employment for Native people. I think pre-ANCSA, there were more employment opportunities, and they seem to be decreasing. The workforce, Native workforce here in Kodiak, as well as out in the fishing grounds. One of the other things that was mentioned earlier was confidentiality, and I sat on the Karluk Board of Directors for some years prior to merging with the regional corporation. And we were able to handle confidentiality. We did open our meetings up to shareholders, and of course, when we needed to discuss strategy or something that was confidential, we had asked our shareholders if they would be able to leave, and we set time aside so they'd be able to do that. And I think in that respect, we were able to keep the communications open with our shareholders. We still, even the Karluk IRA Land Committee, welcomes the shareholders to their meetings. I've traveled throughout the state and have worked with various village corporations, profit, and have observed many of those also that continue to hold community meetings. They have everybody from the villages attending. And of course, the board of directors then again will go into a closed session if it's something that is confidential that would, you know, hurt the corporation in any way. I think one of the major things that I've observed as a result of ANCSA is that a lot of the outside shareholders that enrolled back to their villages have become alienated from their own people in the villages. One of the things, if you recall with ANCSA, you're allowed to enroll back to either your origin, your birthplace, or the origin of your family. And based upon the population, then a village was able to select a certain amount of acreage. I think it was like 23,000 acres for, what, 1 to 99 people, something like that. Jean can correct me on that. In our particular case in Karluk, our selection was about 115,000 acres. Karluk being the only reservation on the island formed under the IRA Act, it had an option of participating in ANCSA or remaining a nonprofit organization. Losing reservation status, but being able to select both surface and subsurface. At the time, of course, we approached the region and asked, you know, if we could have some funding to take a look at the pros and cons of either participating in ANCSA or remaining not a reservation, but a nonprofit with our reservation lands of about 35,000 acres. Of course, we couldn't get the money, so the only other option then was to participate. I realize that you're going to be meeting in Larson Bay to hear testimony. It's unfortunate that you don't have village residents here tonight, because I think in the earlier years when Koniag was formed in 1972, the board of directors was structured different, allowing each village to be represented on the board of directors. You don't have that now, I believe. I think it's at large. So your representation can come entirely out of the urban area. And several of the village corporations that are represented even here this evening are generally native people that live here in Kodiak and conduct profit business. Again, I would say that ANCSA, as a result of ANCSA, we have seen our people alienated. One of the examples that we recently experienced was the village of Karluk again, which is not incorporated under state law. It did incorporate as a village corporation for the purpose of receiving lands and monies under the act. However, in 1980, our shareholders decided to merge with Koniag. Only two villages are still merged with Koniag, and that's created a problem. Our people live on a river, it's about 20-some miles long, and they are dependent upon the resources of that river. There is no store in the village.